This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 17, Team Personalities. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the personality of a team. Can a group of people have an individual personality? Listen to the show to find out what we have to say about that. And we also answer a couple of questions from listeners. One about the front arm for leg spin bowlers, another one about swimming for fast bowlers. All that and much more fun coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket. Wherever you are and whoever you are, we are here to help you. It's half an hour of fun and a bit of education thrown in there at some point, somewhere, we hope anyway. And who are we? Well, my name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches, the first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks very much. Yeah, very good.
Fantastic. I'm pretty good too. As we speak, my club has played 6 senior games and won 6 senior games. So, especially after
awesome. The
disaster of last year, I think the wheels are certainly back on and we're shooting along the track at high speeds. So, of course, that's going to change at some point, I'm sure. But right now, we're just basking in the glory. Second of all, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. A bit foggy with you today.
It is a little bit foggy down by the sea. We can hear the ferries going backwards and forwards with the foghorns going. No Monster Munch with me today, I'm afraid, David.
Speaking of winning games, one thing that I'm focusing a lot more on this year is the kind of the personality of the team, if that sounds like something that's possible to happen. How a team gels together and how different personalities go together to form this sort of... It's this thing that is beyond just those 11 individual people or in a squad, you know, 15, 20 individual people. So I was wondering what your thoughts were on that. Can a team have a personality? And how can you use that to improve your chances of winning a game of cricket?
Well, I think yes is a simple answer. And generally that personality comes from leadership and senior players. And that's very prevalent, I think, in most really successful teams. You've only got to look probably at the recent T20 World Cup final to have a look at two teams that very much had a character, a personality and a presence about them. And in the West Indies, they had leadership from Sammy in particular, and the way that he embraced his senior players with the likes of Bravo. And obviously the big fella who smacks it out of the park was absolutely fantastic. They had a lot of fun, they had a lot of dancing, a lot of singing, and that very much came across in their cricket, and they set themselves up with the social media world and displayed that character, which then went out onto the pitch. In the same way, England, you know, played a very exciting brand of cricket. They picked a captain who smacks it, and even if he doesn't get any runs himself, he's somebody who projects positivity in the coaching staff. All of their language is very positive, and at any opportunity they had to put Joe Root out there, who's an incredibly positive person, they would do, and as a result their brand of cricket's changed over the last 12 months. So you have two fantastic examples there from the top end of the game in the shortest format.
So Lavers, how do you influence the personality of a team? Can you do it?
I think Gareth was talking along the lines of the senior players and them having a big impact on the personality. One of the things that I've tried to do over the last few years is try and work with those senior players and make it clear that there are lots of things that we want to have in our outlook as a team and in the way we want to be portrayed and the way we want to approach things, but Can we have a few things that are real priorities and are things that we filter down through? Every year at school, we get a new group of players, and making that personality, making that style of play remain year in, year out and develop year in, year out is something that's quite tricky to do, but identifying those players who will have a social impact as well as a cricketing impact within the group is quite key. And they're seen as social leaders sometimes, even if they're not necessarily kind of the best players in the side, but they have influence over the others, and getting them to buy into whatever it might be. And obviously it's got to be something that's an agreed theme or an agreed goal. But finding a way of getting their buy-in and possibly by illustrating where it's been successful with the year above them. Often at school, it's the players look towards the boys in the year above or the girls in the year above, because they've often been the players that have inspired them in the past. So utilising the older age groups or the players that have left, which we try to do from time to time, and get them back and talk about what they did when they were in their time here at PGS, and the kind of standards that they had is a really good tool to kind of get the buy-in from a group of players or any individuals who maybe aren't quite fitting the personality or the theme of the team that you're looking for.
And you always get those guys who are really up for it and positive all the time and having a good laugh and having a good time and bring a lightness to the team. And then also you get the guys who are super serious, very focused on negative side of things and really looking to, you know, although both ideas come from the same place in that, you know, they want to win a game of cricket. They come from such polar opposites. How do those guys gel together? Is that something that can even be done? Or is it just one of the things where they just have to learn to live with each other and understand that they're not? Understand each other rather than just, you know, trying to change each other or thinking that one is too jokey and the other one's too serious.
Absolutely. It's creating an awareness between the two that people have different ways of approaching things and different types of personality. And some people are going to be very, very positive and others are naturally quite sceptical. But as long as people are aware of how each other assess situations and how they react and how they speak and what that actually means, someone who is quite negative but gives some good feedback is still very, very useful information. So I think in terms of team morale, sometimes you've got to be aware that some people voice things slightly differently, and some boys maybe have to work on that and potentially try and be a little bit more positive and try and adapt the way they speak, because they're in a comfortable group in amongst their friends, but they're not always going to do that. They're going to go off to play at different cricket clubs and different universities, so potentially they might have to adapt their style of delivery anyway and their way of talking. So rather than just accepting, is also an opportunity for improvement. But again, having a bit of dialogue amongst a group, we actually had a really good discussion yesterday, and one of the boys said that he felt that one of the leaders in the group was tactically really good, but when things went wrong, felt it was a little bit negative. And the boy immediately replied with, I know that, I just can't help it. I just can't resist. And I just kind of blurt it out immediately. And he was like, well, at least I know that you're not meaning to do it now. And it brought about a really good discussion where they talked about trying to take a little bit more time over their comments and over their discussions before they kind of started blurting something out in the field or when they were batting or bowling, whatever. So just a little bit of dialogue between the two and those different personality types has actually been really useful for us in letting two boys understand each other and potentially a whole group of players understand one of the guys in the team who was perceived as being negative, but actually was just struggling a little bit with his communication.
Yeah, so often it's just down to putting into words, isn't it? What you're thinking. Sometimes that's enough. You know, don't worry about offending someone. Just say what you're thinking, and then the other person can say what they're thinking, and then everyone can get on with it.
Absolutely. If you have a group of players who are quite willing to sit in front of each other at the end of the game and say, look, I think you got this right and I think you got that wrong, and someone else can go, that's useful, that's helpful information, that's going to make me better and that's going to make the team better and I understand why you're saying it to me, then you're a long way along the path towards having a pretty mature group of cricketers who are going to improve week in, week out.
Now it's time for the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the questions this week, so let's fire away. First question, basics are underrated.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Most assume trying means failing.
No.
No.
Third question. Everything is an opportunity with the right frame of mind.
Yes.
Yes.
And now we are going to answer a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to this show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website. How it works is we read out those questions, we do our best to answer them, and then we choose a winner of a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can email your questions to us by using coach@pitchvision.com, or you can get in touch with us via social media or many other ways, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. And that's what John has done. And John says, my son is a leg spin bowler. He's only recently been receiving coaching on his bowling. And his coach at the moment wants him to work on using his front arm more and pushing out towards the batter rather than straight up. I'm interested to hear if you guys agree and what sort of drills he should do to improve his bowling.
Well, what you're being told by your coach is pretty sound, basic technical adaptations that we want to see in leg spin bowling. Terry Jenner was a huge fan of pushing the batter's, the hand of the front hand out into the batter's face, getting it going towards the batter. And his premise was that if you did that, then it would help the transfer from back foot contact into front foot contact. And more importantly from him, and something that TJ always used to talk about, was it would enable that bowling shoulder to come up and over rather than coming round the side, which we see a lot of leg spinners doing, sort of flicking the ball around the side rather than getting that shoulder to go up and over and then put shape on the ball. So there's some good basic coaching going on there with some fantastic fundamentals, you know, real good. So it's a really good starting point, and that's what I say about all basics, really, is it's a starting point for you. However, the more and more we know about people, the more we realise that there's some idiosyncrasies, there's some personality stuff which impacts upon how our body moves. So it could be that your son is happier rather than pushing forward, which is good generic stuff, happier pushing up a little bit more. And maybe an adaptation halfway between the two might work. Maybe he's getting his shoulder to come up and over and he's transferring from his back foot to his front foot really well anyway, doing what he's doing. That's really a discussion for the coach. That's really something that can be had a look at on video. But the premise of a front arm is a pretty solid one if somebody is struggling to transfer their weight from back foot to front. If that's happening anyway with what your son's doing, then I'd let him go personally.
So, Lavers, when you see a bowler whose arm is going straight up, what things can go wrong? Obviously, if it's working, you don't want to do too much remedial work when there's nothing to repair. But what when you see that, what is sort of the outcome? What's going wrong when you see that?
Well, there are a couple of potential issues. And as you've said there, absolutely, there is... Any individual may find that something that is a little bit different from the norm might work for them. So just because something could go wrong doesn't mean something will go wrong, first of all. However, a couple of potential issues would be, first of all, just by elevating that front arm really high, some people may find that that just shifts their body weight backwards a little bit. As a result of that, they may find a slower transition from back foot to front foot, losing a little bit of momentum, losing a little bit of speed through the crease, and subsequently they might find that either they can't get as many revs on the ball, they can't get as much pace on the ball, or potentially they're having to work even faster with that arm, which might impact a little bit on their control of length. So there are a few potential issues there if someone does find themselves pushing their body weight back slightly. So that's one thing to be aware of if you get too high. The other thing is what you do after you get high. So after getting that arm high, are we then extending it forwards? Are we pulling it down? What are we actually having as a follow-on movement? Now, pulling it down has some pluses and some minuses, as will extending it forwards. Gareth has kind of mentioned before, the common answer really is to try and extend forwards, and that will get that body weight going forwards, but then the arm will then obviously drive downwards past the left hip. What we're looking to do usually is try and get not only momentum going from back foot to front foot by that forward extension, but we're also trying to get our shoulders from a flat position, if you imagine looking at them from behind, to a position where they're on an angle, maybe 30 degrees or even 45 degrees, so we can get those shoulders up and over. And that's particularly important with the spinners, and I would say particularly important with the finger spinners, who will often find it a little bit harder to get overspin on the ball. I know that wrist spinners have a bit more flexibility in their approach to spinning a ball, so they'll often find different methods of spin slightly easier. But we're definitely looking to get those shoulders up onto that angle of 30 to 45 degrees. And Gara's used that phrase, up and over, with that bowling shoulder. And that's what we're looking to. The impact could be if we're just pulling straight down rather than having any extension forwards and then pulling backwards, is that we then lose a little bit of balance. If you just stand still and lift your arm up in the air and pull your left arm downwards, immediately your body is going to want to fall very slightly to the left. Now, if you're doing that with a bit of movement incorporated and potentially not being in the most balanced position that you could be in, you might find that you do start falling away a little bit, losing a little bit of control of your body, and subsequently losing a little bit of control of the ball. So there are a couple of downfalls, but as long as we're aware of them, as long as we're aware of what we're actually trying to achieve by either pushing forwards, lifting that arm up, etc., then we should be okay. And most importantly, as Gareth said, everyone will work slightly differently. So while we've got a generic answer, if you were, that's the common method for everyone, just be aware that you might be that person who has to do something slightly differently. So don't close off any avenues until you've had a go at them.
And really, I guess the ultimate test, as I do say this often, but the ultimate test really is what, you know, what's happening at the other end. Is the ball turning? Is it dipping? Is it coming out at the right speed? Is it landing in the right place? Because if those things are happening, then, you know, you're going to be performing as a bowler. It doesn't matter what your action looks like. It's, you know, you're using a bit. Coaches use technique to sort of try and spot those problems first, but it doesn't always mean that those potential problems are ever going to turn into problems.
Absolutely. Outcomes are key. And as are individuals' ambitions of whether they want to improve what they want to do, or if they're happy with what they're achieving now. If they're happy with their outcomes, then there's no obvious reason to make a change. If someone does want to improve or wants to make an alteration in what they're doing to have a positive impact on the outcomes that they're achieving, then we have to start looking at those processes and start potentially making some adjustments. Additionally, if we feel there's a potential injury risk in there as well, even if the outcomes are good, probably it's a bit of our responsibility really to start thinking about how we can retain outcomes ideally, but obviously reduce that injury risk, because that's something that we can't have our bowlers doing, especially with the younger guys, because it's really our responsibility to make sure and take that decision on their behalf that if there's an injury risk that's apparent, we've got to do something about it. There might be some guys who are a little bit older and towards the end of their career, and they're quite happy to go through with potential hazards in their action that could be causing stress or problems. But with the younger guys, it's definitely our responsibility to make sure they don't have those issues, and they're able to play a long and enjoyable career at whatever level that might be.
And that gives us a nice segue actually into the next question, which is from our friend Samvit. And Samvit says, are swimming exercises good for fast bowlers? So Gareth, what's the upsides and the downsides there?
Well, I don't think there's too many weaknesses, to be honest with you, because if we look at any fast bowler, you want them to have really good range of motion. We know that we can get great range of motion through hips, through shoulders as a result of swimming. There's no impact going through the body unless you've got a really bad diving technique into the pool. And it's a pretty good thing to do, both in training, as in the aerobic side of things, building some good musculature around the shoulder as well from a throw-in and a bowling perspective. But more importantly for me, from a recovery point of view, it's absolutely magnificent. And something that our guys do every Monday after they've had a weekend full of cricket is do a recovery session in the pool. you know, they just walk through a range of motion exercises. They do a bit of running in the pool. It's fantastic recovery. They put the old belts around the middle. So again, there's no impact. There's no weight being distributed through the body, and they can get a really good recovery and workout out of the resistance of the water. So to me, there's nothing wrong with it at all. And having been in the West Indies last week, it was brilliant to see all of the old school bowlers, the Courtney Walshes, the Tony Grays, the Ezra Mosleys, the Winston Benjamins, as soon as they'd had a hard day. And these guys are 50 plus nowadays. As soon as they had a hard day doing fielding and batting and bowling in the sessions that we ran, the first thing that we did when we got back to the hotel was everybody went into the sea and they just swam around and did all their recovery work. And that's something that those guys did for many, many years. It served them pretty well. And I'm sure most of the listeners here who are fast bowlers would love to take some of their records with them.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind living somewhere where you could have a dip in the sea after a session as well. That'd be quite nice.
Yeah, useful.
So Gareth was talking about injury prevention there, Lavers. But is there any kind of are there any dangers to athletes who do a lot of overhead work doing any kind of particular style of swimming?
Well, good question, actually. Swimming's not really my specialist area at all, but yeah, I guess there could be potential problems with overuse again. I know obviously it's a low impact sport, but it's quite a high stress sport physically on the body, because it can be something that's extremely exhausting and extremely difficult to do. And obviously looking at certain strokes, not that we'd necessarily get your fast bowlers in doing a butterfly session for 1500 meters yeah. immediately after they finish bowling, but obviously some strokes are a little bit more strenuous than others. So trying to make sure that we're looking at the right things is a good start. And obviously if we're looking at front crawl, that's something that does kind of promote mobility, and it does simulate in a way the actions of a fast bowler. And additionally, we can look at different types of kicking. So we can look at using floats to try and work on those legs. And that can be either a standard kick or a breaststroke kick. But both are good ways of developing different parts in the lower body. My only hesitation on it would be if swimming starts to take over and people start doing long drawn out swimming sessions, which especially in the build up to matches and in the build up to a season or in season probably aren't enormously conducive for in line with S&C objectives when it comes to power generation. If we're looking to develop powerful muscles and we're looking to gradually move from the long drawn exercise and the strength work into the power work towards the season, then any swimming we do probably needs to be reasonably limited. So we're not going and doing a 40-minute swimming session in the pool and doing however many lengths that would be, probably about three for me, I would have thought. But we're actually doing something that's specific. If it's used as a recovery tool, then it's fantastic. Really, really good way to just try and let the body recover without any impact, without any big stress, because we're not looking to push ourselves too hard. But equally, be aware of that power output that fast bowlers in particular are looking to generate. We're trying to teach our muscles to move quickly. So swimming is an opportunity to be used as a tool there as some sprint swimming. So some 25 meters and some repeated 25 meter sets is a good way to do some power output stuff. But then I'd use it as a recovery tool as well, rather than using it as something that's going to be an aerobic exercise to do for half an hour, 40 minutes, unless we're talking early pre-season or mid pre-season, where we're looking to kind of establish that aerobic base. Okay, soapbox time. Today's David, 60 seconds on the clock. Let's see what he's got to talk about.
I guess following on from what we were talking about earlier with team cohesion, one of the things that I've noticed is quite a difference in attitude of players within the team that we play in at the moment. Some guys are very passionate, very intense players, and they see the idea of performing well and putting in a good performance as taking everything very, very seriously. At the other end of the scale, you've got guys who still want to win games, still want to play at their best, but they still have the idea of having fun and enjoying it and having a laugh and a giggle. There are times when those laugh and giggle guys need to be a bit more serious, and there are times when those serious guys need to have a little bit more fun. It doesn't matter if someone tells the joke in the middle of a game, even if you're under the pump, because sometimes you have a bit of black humour to get you through. So going back to that idea of understanding each other, if you can understand each other a little more, then you can forgive what you might think is a transgression, but is what is actually helping somebody get through a difficult time. And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we leave, we are going to decide on the winner of the competition. Of course, it's an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had two questions. John had a question about his son's leg spin bowling and the front arm there. And Samvit had a question about swimming and fast bowling. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Yeah, so this week I'm going to go with John. Great question about leg spin. Really, really specific. Some good stuff in there from Terry Jenner, which can act as a starting point, but also incorporating some idiosyncrasy and individuality around it.
Congratulations to you, John. And if you wanted to send in your question, Gareth has all the details on how you can get in touch with us.
Okay, you can give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter @pitchvisionacad. You can also subscribe to the show. If you listen every week, then you can do so in a number of ways. Go to your podcast app on your phone or other device and click on the search box, type in Pitch Vision Academy, and tap the subscribe button to get the show delivered to you every Friday. And if you want to get the show notes, or if you want to stream the show via the web or get the old shows downloaded, then you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks, guys. Bye.